Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. This is the Between the Ropes broadcast. Brian Fritz, along with Michael Wiseman, who promises that he will not have any wardrobe malfunctions throughout the entire show, right?
Hey, I didn't make that promise. Let's not get ahead of ourselves right now.
Thank God I can't see you, just in case you do have one.
Oh, you wish. Right now, man. I'm going to tell you something.
Well, it looks like Eva Marie is not the only person in the WWE that has had a wardrobe malfunction, which we will get to. We'll talk a lot about Raw, SmackDown from this week, some comments from a former World Heavyweight Champion, and we will also talk about two people now that have been released from WWE and the trials and travails of a hot free agent in WWE just trying to find his way. As we get going, which is customary for everybody listening to the podcast, whether it's on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, all the various places that you can check out the podcast, also on BetweenTheRopes.com, we have to know the dying question, as always. What are you drinking tonight, Michael?
First off, I need to clarify this. You should call me by my proper name, the face that runs the place.
The face that runs the place. Well, if I was to call you by your proper name, I would be calling you brother and then whatever your middle name is.
Brother Anthony.
Brother Anthony.
Brother Anthony. We could do that. That works for me, too.
Brother Anthony, I knew you'd come.
You're let's see here. You're what's your middle name? You're Brian something Fritz.
Robert.
Robert. Ooh, this is good. Brother Robert. Ooh. Okay, here we go.
Brother Bob. No.
Robert. With the old let's say this is my favorite beer, the beer of every week for the Wiseman. That is Fat Tire in a can, the way God intended beer.
In a can. I love it.
Made by New Belgium. I probably had this one on the podcast numerous times because it is the beer of all beers, or as they say in other marketing slogans, the king of beers. Here we go.
Mm. Ah, I like that sound.
That's right. You like that little click with the aluminum pop right there? That's you like what a can that does for you.
You like the carbonation? Just psst, you know?
Ah, oh, so tasty. Mm. Ah, I love it. So.
What's it hit your lips? It's so good.
Good news, too. I am not podcasting from the floor this week, so my drunken antics will all take place at my desk. I think we're good.
That's fantastic. I'm glad that you are assembling furniture.
Slowly but surely, baby. We'll get there.
Yes. And also a programming note for everybody. So Michael and I, just over a week from now, we will be back in Brooklyn. We will be up in the NYC to cover SummerSlam.
And ride the Brooklyn trains, because I love it. I love all the maps that don't make any sense, and I love the smell of the heat and the homeless people.
Let me tell you something. I was in New York about 2 months ago, and there were times where I was with family, and so I could not get lost because they live there, and they know their way around very well. But there were other times where it was just me and my wife, and I did not get lost. It's the first time I've ever been to New York City and did not get turned around. Wow. To where, like, I got on a subway going the wrong direction or walked like three blocks out of the way. And I was like, wait a second, we got to backtrack, anything like that. So I'm almost, you know, and it was in the Brooklyn area, too. So I almost know my way around Brooklyn a little bit now.
I like Brooklyn. Brooklyn's nice. It's a little quieter. It's not quite as, I mean, it's a little bit hipster, you know?
Absolutely.
But Manhattan and that whole whatever, I don't know, upper, lower, I don't know what the differences are. But anyway, the real New York-y side of New York.
That's, you know, uptown. That's uptown.
Uptown.
Brooklyn's, yeah, downtown.
Uptown, yep, that's right. You got to get downtown. Uptown girls.
See, look at this, man. I figured it all out, man.
You're
me and the Big Apple.
You're a regular damn Yankee. Go to you.
But we will be there covering all the events, and we'll be doing some podcasts while we're there as well. Now we've expanded our technology. That we will be taking with us. So, and
have we?
Yes, we have.
We got a newer model iPhone this year. Woo!
But we'll also be covering the launch of 2K17. They're having a big launch party for that. And
well, technically not launch. Technically, launch happens October. This is the kickoff. I don't know. What do they call this thing exactly?
It's their kickoff event for 2K17. Yeah. So we'll be speaking with some WWE talent while we were there.
And some WWE not so talented.
Yeah, well, and we never have any idea who we're going to speak with until we get there, and we will figure it out once it's there. But we will have some different WWE interviews, and we'll try to bring the sights and sounds of SummerSlam weekend. We'll be at the NXT show, and we will be at SummerSlam, so it'll be a nice busy weekend for us coming up, and everybody can listen to the audio and other things that we hope to provide coming up next weekend when we go to Brooklyn.
Over under on Eva Marie being there.
Ooh, I would say definitely under, whatever number you want to throw out there.
I don't really understand gambling, so 50.
Well, you got to put, what are the chances she's going to be there? And if you say 50-50 chance, I'd say less than that.
Okay, okay. What are the chances she's there and she has a wardrobe malfunction?
That's a zero. I guarantee she will not have a wardrobe malfunction while she's there. But she will apparently have one to get out of a match, like we saw in SmackDown. Let's start with Raw, okay? So, it's funny, since the brand extension, we've wondered, like, how are they going to make these shows different? How are they going to make them stand out and evolve from what we've seen in the past, especially now that Raw and SmackDown are supposed to be competing brands with one another and trying to come up with new evolutions of what they are putting on television. And this was the first week, and I think both shows are very guilty of it, that they fell back into the habit of what we've seen in the past, and it's just the same kind of setup, same kind of shows, obviously different talent involved and put in different positions, but I got the feeling from both shows that it was what we've seen over, you know, the past years going on now when it comes to WWE programming, of the way that they set up the show. There was nothing that really stood out being different from what they've always done in the past, especially when it comes to the first show that Raw did following the draft, when the brand split went into effect. And remember, they did a bunch of different things when it came to in-ring interviews, post-match interviews, just some different things like that. And they've already kind of abandoned that and just gone back to the tried and true formula that they like.
I disagree with you a little bit. I think they have kind of leaned back into their comfort zone this week, a little bit last week, more so this week. As we get closer to SummerSlam, they've kind of been on autopilot, I think, waiting for the ramp up next week where we remind everybody, yeah, there's a pay-per-view coming up and yeah, you should care. But I disagree with you because, again, SmackDown's doing some things that are different with the way they present the show. Still, that big thing about talking smack at the end, having Renee Young pop up throughout the show and discuss events that just happened, that interview she did with The Miz. Some of those kinds of things are unique, and they take the place of old segments that used to take place, like Talk is Jericho, but whatever the Jericho talking show in the middle of the ring hour, you know, Miz TV, all that kind of stuff. They've replaced some of that with a more structured, and it seemed like that SmackDown was striving for more of a sports broadcast type show. You'd look at the way they present the wrestler cards when they come out. Dean Ambrose has said he most recently defended his title at etc. He's going to defend it again in 2 weeks at SummerSlam. So I think SmackDown's really kind of keyed in on this more of a sports broadcast type show like you would see on Monday Night Football. And Raw didn't do as much of that. It leaned a little more like a classic wrestling WWE show. They did still that stupid interview with the jobbers. But I think Raw feels a little more traditional, whereas it seems like SmackDown is still kind of digging into this sports broadcast style that's what wrestling fans want who really like pure wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you that when it comes to SmackDown, and especially with the inserts for Renee Young and putting the information on the screen. And it's funny because the first week that we saw both Raw and SmackDown following the brand split, it really felt like Raw was getting the sports type of presentation. And now that's kind of drifted to where they've gone back to the tried and true presentation that we're used to for that program. And SmackDown has kept what they've done and even expanded it a little bit to where maybe it feels a little bit different and a little bit more sportsy in the way that they're doing the show.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that they would flip, but I think to me, it seems like Raw should be the traditional wrestling we've come to know from WWE, like the more story driven, more segments with more talky segments, like the Seth Rollins thing. That's what Raw needs to be in SmackDown. I really like this more of a sports athletic presentation. I hope they dig into this more and don't become, like you're saying, a little more neutral, a little more nondescript between the two brands. We'll see.
Yeah, you know, and once again, you know, they started off the show with a talking segment, but they had Enzo out there. They had Chris Jericho. It evolved to where Big Cass and Kevin Owens were out there. So they had all four of them. You know, some people liked the segment. Some people didn't. Some people thought it got a little bit cheesy. But, you know, you've got guys out there that can all talk. You know, so I can't blame them for that. And they're putting these guys in a really good position. You know, and by the end of it, Jericho beat Enzo in a one-on-one match, and they set up the match that everybody thought was going to happen at SummerSlam, is that those two teams would go up against one another. So, hey, I'm all for that. You know, but it, once again, it's, you know, a lot of talking to begin the show. Seth Rollins, like you said, he had a long talking segment, but I don't have a problem with that. You know, I mean, I like, you know, Seth going out there and talking. It was interesting that what they used with Finn Balor was not anything live. It was a pre-tape for Finn. And, you know, I'm fine with that, too, from a standpoint that they're accentuating the positives out of him. And they did that for a reason, because they wanted to explain his name and they wanted to explain, you know, the demon side of him. So that's fine, you know. But Seth is the guy that they definitely trust a lot more on the mic. And he had a really good long segment out there. But you also got the feeling that as much as he's talking about Finn Balor for this match, that sooner rather than later, he's going to be paired up again with Roman Reigns.
Yeah, I'm very convinced at this point that Finn Balor has no or little to no chance of walking out with the new Universal belt come SummerSlam. Of course, Seth Rollins is money on the mic, and he definitely went out there and sold it and convinced, you know, everybody in the world that he's going to win come next Sunday. The segment with Balor, they leaned into what he does well. They brought him and put him in a place where he really traditionally excels. I didn't like it that much. It came across somewhat inauthentic. I thought it was just slight, you know, it was fine. It wasn't bad, but the demon thing at the end
Well, the reason they did that, too, is so next week they said Seth Rollins is going to invite the demon to come on, you know, on Raw. To me, it better just be Finn. I mean, you don't want to see the demon until SummerSlam. And Finn can come out there and he could say, hey, you know what? You will see the demon side of me. Trust me. It's a side you don't want to see. It's a side that you'll be afraid of. And you will see it come SummerSlam. You know, you will see that side of me come then, you know, because Seth can make a big deal like, you know, I challenged the demon to come on here and you couldn't do it, you know, for whatever reason. So, and
it's just like, that's not a real, it's kind of like that Willow character from Jeff Hardy, right? The thing that makes the demon magical is it's this focused energy from Finn, right? Not some separate character that he uses for big matches or for big events. And it feels really special, but he doesn't like come out and talk in a different voice. Or he doesn't come out and do some hocus pocus. So trying to advertise the demon is coming to me oversells it, and I would much rather see the demon be a part of the Finn Balor persona rather than this kind of like almost separate entity, you know?
Yeah, you know, and it's obvious now that Finn is going to be painted up. He's going to be the demon come SummerSlam. And to me, if you are going to go with that, you know, on that big of a stage, if he's going to already come out and be the demon, which I'm a little bit surprised by, I would have held off on that, you know, until later in the year or whenever. But they're going to go with it. To me, if you are going to go all out and he's already going to bring out the demon and it's going to be a big entrance and he's going to be all painted up and everything, Finn Balor has to win that match at SummerSlam.
Okay. You don't think it adds to the mystique of Seth Rollins if Rollins comes away with the victory?
Well, I think it would be a wasted opportunity to bring out the demon character and go through all of everything that goes with it. And then the first match he has as the demon and he loses. I don't think he could do that.
Well, okay. I don't think WWE feels that way. I think WWE could do the exact opposite. I think they go through all of this and they have no problem making Finn have to take a step back and eventually overcome the odds. I mean, he's only 190 pounds, so I mean, he's not a world champion.
Well, here's the thing, though. If he's going to do that, then why would he get dressed up as the demon? Why wouldn't he just be Finn Balor? And then and you could build up to him being the demon. You could build up to, say he lost and he has to work his way up. And then the next time that he faces Seth saying, hey, you know what? That first time, We went toe to toe, and I should have had you, but I didn't. I need to go further. I need to go more. I need to unleash this demon that's inside of me to overcome you. And then you make a big deal about the demon.
That's long-term storytelling, and I still don't think it's in the place that WWE is. Long-term storytelling is not what WWE does right now, especially not that kind of long-term storytelling. They fall into it sometimes where they harken back. I think Seth Rollins is a good example of that. They harken back to previous events and tie them into what's happening now, but I don't think they plan far enough ahead to think about, or maybe even to plan for, better way to put it, the consequences of hot-shotting the demon angle.
Let's go to that comment that you mentioned, okay? I know you're joking, but it's a real comment. So what you were referring to when talking about Finn Balor being 190 pounds and not really World Heavyweight Championship material, that's Ric Flair. So Ric Flair, on one of his more recent podcasts, said that. And he wasn't trying to be mean to Finn, and I think he has a lot of respect for Finn, but with Finn being billed as 190 pounds, he said, I just don't think that he's big enough to be a World Heavyweight Champion. Talking about his size and everything. And you look at him, and Finn is muscular, but he's not a huge guy. You know? I mean, he's very thin, but he has muscle. He's got probably, arguably the best abs in the business, if you're into that. that dude, I tell you what, man. You go back and watch him as Prince Devitt in Japan. I mean, that guy for the last 12 years has had a six-pack of abs. It's incredible. But there is an argument to that. Now, you could say, well, Daniel Bryan is about that size, a little bit bigger, a little bit more muscular, I guess. Shawn Michaels, smaller guy, but bigger than that, bigger than Finn. Not too much bigger as well, but, you know, very well-respected, you know, champion and one of the greatest workers of all time in the wrestling business. So,
Is it just muscle mass? What is Ric Flair missing, I guess, from Finn? Is he saying that Finn is not strong enough?
I think that's a lot of it, is muscle mass, or just kind of how thick you are when it comes, you know, you don't have to be the biggest guy, but be a little bit thicker, I guess, which he's just not going to do. But you know what's funny is that we sit here and we talk about how the wrestling business has changed, and we see so many different great workers. You know, WWE has even adapted this, but obviously it started on various indies. But size has not mattered as much when it comes to people appreciating a good work match and the exciting things that people can do. But yet, and I understand this, especially from a case of Ric Flair, because, you know, that's his generation. But he sits there and he talks about size, and size still matters. And I still think that even though we can say, well, that's, you know, that's Ric Flair, that's a guy in his 60s, that the way that he came up with the business is that you had to be a bigger guy to be the World Heavyweight Champion, which I understand. But I still think that there's a lot of that mentality that people still look like, you know what? I understand that there's a lot of great workers now, and there's guys that, you know, the average size, I guess, of somebody we expect to see, especially in the WWE, is nowhere near as big as it once was. But even though we'll accept somebody smaller as a champion, maybe that's even too small.
I only would believe that and agree with that if WWE had actual divisions. Let's say the heavyweight division was an actual weight class division. The cruiserweight division, which is a weight class division, was treated as an equal to the heavyweight division. You know, kind of like UFC. They're all champions of their respective divisions. But it's not like that. The belts represent tiers of accomplishment. And whenever you win the big belt, you've won the highest prize in your game. It doesn't matter the weight class. So while it is heavyweight, or now they've even taken that out and just calling it the Universal Championship, I don't think it makes a bit of difference. And again, they said this with the cruiserweight thing. These guys are coming in leaner, faster, more athletic than ever before. And Ric Flair's day, no offense, you had some big guys, but you had some guys who were roided up, who maybe took some kind of supplement to get them there, and they weren't as athletic as what we're seeing in the ring today. So sorry, Flair.
Well, here's the other thing too. I think if a guy can work, and if a guy is super charismatic and really is in touch with the crowd, if the crowd is into the guy, size is not going to matter as much.
Sure.
And we still don't know how that is going to be when it comes to Finn and the main roster. I mean, there just hasn't been enough time yet. The good thing for him, though, that I will say is at SummerSlam, that's going to be a very smart crowd. That's going to be like a WrestleMania kind of crowd. So, and they're going to be people that know him already, that are really into him. So I think that's really going to play to an advantage there. the question then is going to be what happens after that. That's why I think Finn's going to win. And I think that allows him then to move on to a program against either Kevin Owens or Chris Jericho. And it allows Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns to kind of fight out in that number two slot there on that show to say who's going to be next in line after that.
So then we're setting ourselves up for Roman Reigns versus
Seth Rollins
down the line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
After that.
Oh, yeah. And that's a point, too, where because they've already had the one match and they're going to go back to it. And that's where I think you could see a potential Roman Reigns heel turn.
Okay. I see your logic.
I'm doing long-term booking here. And once again, I'm going to say this, and I know I say stuff and I'm serious about it, but at the same time, I joke about some different things as well. When I throw out different ideas and then I talk about, hey, WWE did that. They're stealing ideas from us. And then there's people on Twitter that think I'm very serious about it, which I'm not. I'm joking. I don't know if they're listening to the podcast or not. I know they used to. They may very well still be. I would doubt that they are. But I'm not saying like somebody from creative or, you know, Triple H is listening to the podcast going, that Fritz is coming up with some great ideas. Let's do it. You know,
Triple H is, though. He's got his little notepad out. He's jotting it down. Okay.
Yes. And he's sitting there. Or his assistant's like, hey, boss, you won't believe what Fritz said this week. It's some great stuff, man. We got to do it. This guy is hot. You know what, though? Let's not sign him, because if we did, we'd have to pay him. So he's coming up with great ideas for free every week in his podcast. We're getting free stuff here. It's great.
I can tell you something right now. These guys, if they listen to podcasts, they're sure as heck not listening to analysts and commentators and sports news people talk about pro wrestling. You know what they're doing? They're listening to financial podcasts or football podcasts or fantasy football. You know, they live this business. They don't want to listen to this crap in their spare
time. I was going to say, do you really think that Triple H at midnight when he's doing his, you know, hour and a half workouts? Or Vince McMahon, when apparently he gets up at 2 o'clock in the morning to do workouts.
Catches Pokemon in his gym.
According to Dean Ambrose during his interview with Stone Cold on Monday, he said that he had a long conversation recently with Vince McMahon as he ran into the boss, who was on his way to the gym at 2 o'clock in the morning with a big thing of creatine in one arm as he was going to the gym. I don't think that Vince is going, you know what? I got some time. I'm going to be on that treadmill. I'm going to crank up that Between the Ropes podcast.
Ah, swipe left.
I don't think that Vince is actually going to be doing that. You know what he's doing? He's cranking up some AC/DC. That's a done deal. Vince loves him some AC/DC.
I went to hell on repeat. So did you see the tweet a few weeks ago where like somebody, Vince McMahon doesn't tweet very often, right?
Okay.
Right. Okay. I don't know. Like, he tweets every once in a while. It seems like his increase in frequency. And then out of the blue, he tweets a Pokemon in his gym. Like, you know, Pokemon Go, it shows up in your real life environment. He tweets this.
Wait a second. Do you think that was Vince or do you think that was just his assistant?
Yeah. Yeah. And the comment was something like, watch this. And I was like, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure Vince McMahon was playing Pokemon Go, took a screenshot. I'm sure he knows how to take a screenshot.
Yes.
Jesus.
That Pokemon better not be dipping into my creatine.
Let's check on the old Vince McMahon Twitter account.
Yeah, please do.
Let's see what Vince McMahon is up to these days. He said, welcome back, I am Diddy. Okay.
Yeah, he loves him some P. Diddy.
He tweeting Big Show, doing some Tai Chi.
Mm. Big Show, by the way, somebody, I think Big Show had some photos of himself recently on social media. That dude looks like he's lost a bunch of weight again.
It's the exact quote was, I don't care who you are. Get out of my weight room. Hashtag Pokemon Go. Yeah. And that was the first tweet after he tweeted happy birthday to Brock Lesnar. Like all of these are like either retweets or happy birthday or congratulations.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that Brock read that tweet from Vince McMahon and appreciated it?
And retweeted it? But he did. I bet he retweeted it.
Brock has a Twitter account that he never uses. Like somebody else uses it. And all it is retweets of Paul Heyman stuff. That's all it is. Yep. I mean, look at it. That's all it is retweets of Heyman Hustle.
I bet somebody from Heyman Hustle runs that. I bet he doesn't actually run it himself.
Oh, absolutely. Come on, man. Mm. Yeah. Like Brock Lesnar's going, you know what? I know I got a little time here. You know, I don't want to be lifting some weights or, you know, I'm going to be, you know, looking through my latest Soldier of Fortune magazine or go out in the woods and hunt some wildlife. I'm going to check up what's going on my Twitter feed.
I'm going to tell you something. The It's actually, he follows 27 people.
Ooh.
And they're okay. So here's the list. This is a pretty good list. So okay. It's a bunch of WWE accounts, like WWE Universe, all these official WWE actual, WWE 2K or WWE games. Okay. Makes sense. WWE Insider, whatever. Okay, so here's where it gets interesting. He's following about three UFC official accounts: UFC, UFC Tonight, UFC Fight Club. The slew of traditional people you follow if you work for them: Paul Heyman, Triple H, Stephanie McMahon, Vince McMahon. And then these are the people he follows that are wrestlers. Okay, Big Show, Shawn Michaels, Randy Orton, Sheamus, John Cena, Dwayne Johnson. And I kid you not, CM Punk. Why would Brock Lesnar follow CM Punk other than as the ultimate troll job?
Now, here's a question. Why isn't he following Shelton Benjamin? That's his good buddy.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The hell, man?
I did like how he mentioned him. That was a nice little throwback, and they showed a picture of him, big and bad, back in OVW. That was cool.
By the way, Shelton Benjamin, not coming into SmackDown. So while he was having his physical, they found out he has a torn rotator cuff and he needs immediate surgery. So Shelton Benjamin, if and when, and it's still an if now, I think, but I still think they'll bring him in, but it's going to be probably like 6-8 months before we see Shelton Benjamin, WWE. It's not a monster loss, but it's a pretty good sized loss just from a standpoint of how good a worker he is and all the different people they could have put him against, because SmackDown's a little bit thin. I'm not saying they would have put him near the top. They could have put him in a mid-carding. Definitely can work with some of the younger guys to, you know, just help them get better.
So you know who you should replace him with? That is a huge loss. I agree. I think it's sad. I was excited to see him back. I think he's a more valued talent than what he's been shown over the years. You should, if you are WWE, again, Triple H, take notes, bring in MVP. He's the perfect guy to fill that spot.
Well, there was talk. I mean, Teddy Long did some podcast and said, oh, MVP's coming in. And then he had to retract on that. And
he said, holla, holla.
He's like, holla, holla. I got some hot news for you, everybody.
MVP's coming in. Mixed tag match. Holla if you hear me.
I'm going to put him in a six-man tag.
Rodney Mack's coming back.
I'm going to pair him up with Ron Simmons. It's Doom 2.0.
By the way, I know we did the show rundown earlier. We have breaking news. Remind me that there are two pieces of breaking news we forgot to mention off the air.
Ooh.
So I'll bring those up when we get there. Actually, three pieces of breaking news now.
Whoa. How about that? Breaking news. I like
only
it.
One of them is actually breaking, but two of them have broke since last week. So
how about them apples? Okay. Let's get back to Raw then. So I thought Raw, the best thing that there's two things that stood out to me that were the best things on the show. One, once again, WWE production. They did the video package with Paul Heyman, Brock Lesnar, and Randy Orton hyping up their upcoming SummerSlam match. It was once again one of these, you know, Brock Lesnar says three sentences. He cusses, which gets bleeped out, but it's pure Brock Lesnar. It's Paul Heyman with a great analogy, coming up with some out of nowhere or whatever. Lesnar with a great line of talking about, I went on to bigger and better things, and I became, you know, this world-renowned superstar, while Randy Orton just became a star. And Randy Orton talking about, hey, you know what, I thought we were friends, you know, and, you know, we came up through OVW together in the stack class, and then he left the WWE, and that pissed me off. And I love that Lesnar talking about that is just like, I knew the guy a little bit, but that was it, you know? It's not like we were tight or anything. But they did this great video package, and WWE really stands out when they do those things. They do the sit-downs. They do them right like they did there. The other thing that stood out to me that was just great is the continued emergence of Rusev. Rusev was all over the show. I know there's a lot of people that did not like the cake segment, and you can say what you will about that. But the best part of that segment to me still was Rusev, even later when he was mad about what happened, and then the match that he had to end the show even. He's been fantastic, and I really hope that people are noticing and say, hey, we need to do more with Rusev going forward. He's not just a very good wrestler, which I think he has shown, and he's still underrated in that, but I think he's a very versatile character, and his character's really getting over. I mean, he's really, really good.
He's a great heel. He is one of those guys that he's got a good size on him. He has a unique look, not just because he's got the beard and got the hair, but just his size and the physical specimen that he is makes him very unique looking among the roster. He's a good talker. He sells his character well, but he knows when to pop in and get jeers from the crowd. I love the stuff that whenever the crowd wants Lana, he pops in and he says, "You show my wife some respect." It really gets him that heat. And he shows a lot of emotion. And I was sitting there watching him hold the belt thinking there is a future main event level heel, and I'm looking forward to seeing it. He's going to be there someday, and it's going to be good. I also think we can't overlook the evolution of Cesaro in here as well. Rusev's great. We were worried about Cesaro in the shuffle and the brand split. Cesaro's come up, and they put him in some pretty good spots. Good matches with Sheamus, a former world champion, and even letting Cesaro come out in the main event of Raw this past week in Russell. I think this is about as good as you could hope for where Cesaro was a year ago.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, you know, they once again mentioned, you know, like the drafting spot of him again, or just talked about, you know, underrated, undervalued, whatever. You know, they're kind of going on that route. They're doing more with Cesaro finally. I really thought that he was going to get traded. When they were doing that segment and Daniel Bryan came out with Mick Foley, which another segment that got heavily criticized by a lot of people because the whole thing was going to be talking about Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton going on each other's brands and, hey, let's stop the shenanigans or whatever, which Daniel Bryan was laughing about that Randy Orton came over to Raw and hit Lesnar with an RKO. And that really didn't get addressed. But when Cesaro got involved in that segment, I really thought like they were going to work a trade and Cesaro was going to be going over to SmackDown. Because it really would have made sense this week, too, from a standpoint that SmackDown, not only was it light, but they were without both AJ Styles and John Cena this week, who were on an overseas tour.
Yeah, it was weird. They didn't do more with that segment. I was expecting some kind of, not necessarily Cesaro, but some kind of surprise trade, surprise draft, surprise stipulation. I was thinking they were going to tag on something to the Brock Lesnar-Randy Orton main event match and say, okay, whoever's brand wins gets their pick of two whatever non-champions or something like that from the other brand. So it was weird they didn't do more with that. But, you know, on the other hand, SmackDown is doing all right. I know we're not there yet, but SmackDown feels like even without John Cena and AJ Styles, they've padded out their roster enough with the right guys near the top that it doesn't feel like it's losing too much. Alberto Del Rio and Randy Orton were there. You know, anyway.
They're going to be getting some more guys. I'm still convinced that they're going to get, you know, one or two guys that were like formerly with the company, and then they're going to get one or two guys that are going to be brought from NXT. Mm-hmm. So I think they've got some talent coming. It's just, you know, when are they going to come? You know, I mean,
that's what I thought they might do is some kind of, okay, the winner gets a draft pick of three superstars from NXT. Right.
Okay.
That would have been cool, right? Randy Orton or Brock Lesnar. Of course, then Orton has to win because you can't load up that Raw roster anymore. But
yeah. So here's the three segments I think that the people were really down on that show. Okay. So the Foley Daniel Bryan interaction, which really didn't do anything. The Rusev, Lana, Roman Reigns cake segment, which, hey, come on, there's a cake out there. You know somebody's face is going into that. It was just, I wasn't sure if it was going to be Rusev or Lana when they started that segment. And I should have known Lana because she's wearing all white, even though Rusev was wearing a very light-colored suit, but it made sense for Lana to go face-first into it. And I'll tell you what, she knows how to go face-first into a cake. and in the other segment that stood out, I think, that people were wondering about was Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson dressing up as doctors. And
yeah,
I like, you know, and people are going, oh, here we go. They're already doing all comedy stuff. And by the way, when they started that thing, man, I wish they had more people there because they were obviously doing a spoof of Spies Like Us. They just didn't have enough doctors there. So they're like, doctor. And,
What is Spies Like Us?
Spies Like Us is a movie with Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd, and at one point they're pretending to be doctors, and at one point they're out in the Sahara.
Wait! I know those guys. Dan Aykroyd is the guy from Ghostbusters, and Chevy Chase, he was on Community.
Yes, he was. Okay. They're both also on Saturday Night Live. Okay,
you're aging yourself.
I know, but they did this segment where they're faking to be doctors, and they go into this tent. And they meet. There's like seven doctors. And each of them, to each doctor, goes, doctor, doctor. You know, they say doctor, and then the doctor says doctor back. You know, so it's this whole thing of doctor, 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 doctor. And then they do it when they walk in, and they do it again when they walk out. Okay. I might have been the only one that knew that that's what they were doing a spoof of. Was
that's
like
how
us.
Bad the segment was, because you're literally, what is that, from the 1950s? Why are you going
90s,
back?
Maybe the 80s. I don't know.
Why are you referencing something from
I
the
like
golden
Spies
era?
Like Us. Come on, man. It was a good movie. 1985. Nope. Yeah. Nope. I know. The Vanessa Angel is in that movie.
That was a good era. That was a good year for movies. 1985. What year did Rocky come out?
Donna Dixon was in that movie too, by the way.
I don't even know who that is, so cheers.
Now, I'll tell you what, Donna Dixon and Vanessa Angel in that movie, hot.
Mm-hmm.
Very, yeah. Very, very attractive. Very attractive women.
Black and white, right? You had the
no
talkies, and you had to like they would watch it on the screen, and then little words would pop up telling you what they
okay,
said.
Okay, I'll age myself here for a second. This movie not only had those two, those are the main actors, but there were cameos in this movie by Frank Oz and Bob Hope.
Oh, this is getting worse and worse by the second. And now you understand why that segment flopped so hard.
Oh, man. Yeah, Bob Hope was in that movie. Wow. I guess there wasn't a USO that week. there's another one's going to go over a lot of people's heads. Damn it. But those
yeah,
are the...
I didn't even laugh. I didn't even have a reaction.
I know. You got to sell something for me every now and then. Come on, dude.
That was good.
So, well, let me ask you, especially about the last two segments I mentioned, when it comes to the cake and the gallows and Anderson, did you dislike those as much as it seems like a lot of people did?
Did not care for the doctor site segment and the cake segment. Is that what you asked me about?
Yeah.
I was fine. It was a necessary evil. This was a segment that made a lot of sense from where the characters, quote unquote, characters were coming from. You know, Lana and Rusev just got married, so I think it's fine. I did not have any issues with that segment. Yeah. And the announce team hamming it up was whatever. Like, who else? What? My question is, to people who hated that segment, it achieved the goal of having Roman Reigns come out, get to grab the belt, interrupt things for a little bit. Now, Roman Reigns, I did not like it because I think Roman Reigns, he's trying too hard to be cool, and he says things in the mic that are not cool.
But is that his fault, or is that the creative team still not knowing the character?
I don't know. Somebody's dropping the ball. I don't want to blame Reigns if he was just delivering the lines. Some of those lines come off as like he's ad-libbing a little bit, but maybe I don't know. Whoever's fault it is needs to stop it, because you're hurting Roman Reigns more than you're helping him. When he just comes out and he throws stuff around and he grabs the belt, okay, we're cool. So again, the segment needed to happen. It was a necessary evil. It continued the storyline, and it set them up for a match SummerSlam, whatever. What else would you do?
Yeah, I mean, the segment was fine. I mean, I'm very intrigued about what they're going to do when it comes to that match. But I mean, it's a segment that you could see coming. And then that's fine, because the cake segment, it's always worked. It wasn't like the greatest segment, but I didn't think it was a horrible segment either. The gallows in Anderson, I did not have that big of a problem with it. I get it that some people are like, they're already doing goofy and whatever. They were already starting to do that a little bit when they were still with the club with AJ. When they had the whole
beat
group
AJ
together.
Styles. Beat John Cena up.
Beat up John Cena. And I get it. They were pretty clever with some of the words that they were talking about Big E's injury, which, can we just say, I don't know why they just won't say it, testicular torsion. Come on, man. We're all grown-ups here. Testicular torsion.
You said testicle.
Yes, I did. Trust me, they came out with plenty of jokes that were pretty nutty,
Nutty.
the match, though, that Gallows and Kingston had, that was like a waste of time. And here's the other thing, too. So they're setting this up where they're going to have this tag match, for the titles at SummerSlam, and Big E will not be there because he's got to sell his injury. But no matter what happens to New Day, and I understand that they're the fun-loving, think-positive tag team, but does anything not knock the smile off these guys' faces until they get their asses kicked? It's like, can't you come out and be a little bit serious one day? I mean, they're very entertaining and everything, but there's got to be a point where maybe you say, okay, now we got to get down to business a little bit more. Look what they've done to Big E. They're a serious threat to us. They're hurting our buddy. You know, so now we gotta step up here a little bit.
Well, yeah, but they did that for Bray Wyatt, right? They did the whole thing with Xavier Woods being scared, and it didn't feel very authentic. So I don't know. That's okay. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah, it was just kind of a let's get through it week, you know, on yep. Raw. You know, nothing too exciting, but nothing too bad. It felt like a long show. It did feel like a long show. SmackDown, obviously, it's always going to feel like it's quicker just because it's 2 hours, but I just didn't get a sense of anything special coming off on that show as well. I mean, a little bit shorthanded, obviously. You know, they did Orton against Alberto Del Rio, which was fine.
Yep.
We got to see a jobber tag team, Mike O'Shea and Mikey whatever.
Uh-huh. And they made that awful Mikey joke I've heard all my life. Hey, Mikey, he didn't like it.
Let me bring up this point, okay? So okay. Everybody used to blast the Raw announcing crew, right? So they changed up the crews now. I think the Raw announcing team has gotten better. And I guess the common denominator here is JBL. Here's the thing. JBL, I mean, and it's still very early. They've only done this show a couple of weeks. I think JBL is still trying to find his timing when it comes tomorrow and when to slip in and slip out. They're talking over top of one another too much. I think JBL is trying to be too cute with stuff instead of being just a little bit more serious with stuff. He's always trying to get in like a little one-liner, a little zinger, a little ha-ha, you know, or, you know, hyperbole. Like sometimes when they're going to break, like Morrow will be like, this match will continue when we come back. And JBL's got to get in one last sentence before they go to break. And then you've got David Otunga, who's got that Byron Saxton role of like, I'm not sure when I should talk necessarily unless there's something specifically for me to say here to promote or plug something. So they're still trying to find their way. And I think the Raw announcing team has been a lot better.
It's chemistry. So let me ask you this. If you were going to draft an announced team from the six guys that are doing it for the two main shows, not mm-hmm. exclude Daniel Bryan.
And I got to have three of them.
Have two of them. Let's start off with two. Okay. Who would you pick for your two?
Well, that's easy to me. Morrow and Corey Graves.
Okay. Okay. And if you had to add a third person to that roster, who would it be?
Byron Saxton.
Okay. You wouldn't pick Michael Cole?
No, because he's got to be the lead, and Morrow's already got that role.
So here's the problem.
I think he's the better of all the other announcers there, but I just don't think he would fit.
Okay. Right. Right. So here's the problem. The problem we have here are that the two odd men out, the two guys who fit that third person role, Byron Saxton and David Otunga, they're both not quite with it because their timing is off, both of them. Nothing against David Otunga, I like him, but he just seems a little bit inauthentic. And then you have the other side of it, which JBL is the Raw announcer. He's not the sports guy. He's the character guy. And Corey Graves does a great job with that role. But he's not so over the top where you hate him for it. And so that's why Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo would make a great team. Corey Graves and Michael Cole make a really good
team. They really do. I mean, Corey is so good. I mean, he's just a natural at this.
Michael Cole is good, too. People used to love to hate on him. He's very good.
I've always thought that he always got a Raw deal.
Yes, and he had to follow up Jim Ross, right? So, again, I think the Raw deal here goes to Mauro. Mauro is working with what he's got. He delivers a great, great presentation every week, but I think he's saddled by JBL and David Otunga, and you know, they just need some chemistry.
Yep. So real quickly on SmackDown, we got a lot of Ambrose. You know, he ended up having a team with Ziggler against Bray Wyatt and Eric Rowan. That made perfect sense. After the match, though, I thought it was going to be Ziggler doing something to Dean Ambrose, and it was the other way around. It was Ambrose taking out Ziggler with dirty deeds, and it was kind of like, I had to give you one back, you know, because I helped you out before. Ziggler, at the beginning of the show, just went off on the Wyatts and was attacking them. And Ambrose is like, fine, I'll get in there, you know, I'll help you out. And it set up this match. But they did that. And it was a big night for the NXT women in that Carmella got a submission win against Natalya, which I guess was a little bit surprising. And then they did, it was supposed to be Eva Marie and Becky Lynch. Eva Marie was set to start the match, and she had a wardrobe malfunction where her top almost came off. And so she could not wrestle, and Alexa Bliss came out, took her place, and right near the end of the match, the, you know, Eva Marie's announcer got in there and goes, Eva Marie is now ready to make her debut. And it kind of threw Becky off her game, and Alexa Bliss got the victory, which I think was a little bit surprising as well, especially considering that it seemed like Becky was going to be the linchpin for the women's division on SmackDown, and that really hasn't happened yet. I mean, so she lost to Alexa Bliss the previous week. She was supposed to wrestle Eva Marie. It didn't happen because Eva faked an injury. So I'm still waiting to see what they're going to do with Becky and get her on track. I assume this is going to lead to Becky against Eva Marie maybe in the pre-show for SummerSlam. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that could work. I could see that.
She better kick her ass something fierce on that show.
I feel like they are going that route. I think they're going to set up for the women's division on SmackDown, Becky as the champion, and I think Natalya is going to be your main challenger from the heel side after they actually have this division established.
Yeah, that can make a lot of sense. The other thing on the show was, so Heath Slater's out there wearing a shirt that says free agent on it, which I assume is available on WWEshop.com right next to the $9.99 shirt and the Y2AJ t-shirts that I left over.
Yes, the great two-week tag team of Y2AJ.
They're still
one of the greatest of all time.
They're still getting the money on that merch. But so Heath Slater is getting his opportunity against Rhino. Of course, Rhino beat him. And then they go to the segment in the back where Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon are like, you know what, that Heath Slater, man, he's showing a lot of moxie. You know, he's showing a lot. We're going to give this guy a contract. We got a contract. Heath Slater comes back there, goes on a rant, and is just like, you guys don't like me and everybody this and that, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know what? Fine. You know what? I'm the hottest free agent. I'll go where I want it. And you don't like me, then too bad. And la, la, la. And he's like putting them down. And he walks off and doesn't even realize they're about to give him a contract. And then, of course, they say, well, guess we're not giving him a deal now.
I like the reference too, to Rhino, being winning his primary last week. That was fun.
Yes, they did mention that as well. So
are they setting up? We didn't talk about this too much. Are they setting up Dean Ambrose for a heel turn?
I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting question. They could be. I don't think so, though. I think Ambrose is going to win that match. I think they're setting up Dean Ambrose against AJ Styles.
Yeah.
And then I think that's where they're going to go. And then I think they are going to be setting up Ziggler against Wyatt, maybe? Or it could be Ambrose against Orton. They've got a couple of different things they could do there. But
that would make sense. I think Randy Orton, if he wins especially, that could be.
Right, which definitely could happen. I mean, we'll talk about that a lot more next week, you know, in previewing SummerSlam. But that's definitely on the table. It's something I wouldn't have thought of in the past. But it's definitely on the table. Okay, so Ambrose did Stone Cold's podcast on after Raw on Monday night. This was vintage Dean Ambrose. And I think what you see on TV, that personality, that is Dean Ambrose. I think he is a very interesting guy. I think he's very unique. He is, he can be a very tough interview sometimes. And you know, he's still going to, you know, be a little bit, he doesn't like to let himself all the way out there sometimes, you know. He's still like that. We got a first hand of that. We sat down with him a couple of years ago before WrestleMania and talked to him. And it's not that he's not a good dude, and I think he's a fantastic wrestler and a great personality. I think he loves the wrestling business and he lives it. I think he thinks the curtain is pulled back too far, and he will do interviews and he'll do mainstream stuff. He's done all these different things for, you know, morning shows, and he's done interviews like with us and other people, but he's still going to be a little bit, you know, he still watches himself a little bit. And
sure.
And he did this a little bit here with Stone Cold, and Austin, to his credit, stayed on him, and he really had to stay on him and ask him follow-ups. And even then he wasn't getting like the answers that he wanted, or he wanted to get more out of Dean. And I think some people are like, what the hell is Dean doing? That's Dean.
That's Dean, yeah.
That's just Dean. I mean, I've interviewed him now four times.
He's so weird. Like, every time, and I've not been there with you every time you've interviewed him, but when we have talked to him in the past, he's just this kind of guy that Like, for example, he opened up to us about jeans. Do you remember that conversation we talked about?
Yeah, because
jeans
we were talking
like
to him about, oh, you and Luke Harper have the same outfit. And he was just like, ah, yeah, I know. People are joking around about that. He goes, but I got better jeans. And he was talking about how he was having trouble finding jeans that would fit him correctly. But then he found this company that these jeans fit great, you know, which was so weird that we're sitting down with him, you know, a couple of days before WrestleMania. And he's talking about jeans. And then last year before SummerSlam, remember, I interviewed him talking about the 2K game and just about whatever. And remember the rumor was that there was a rumor going around that Sting, they were going to do a six-man match. And it was going to be Ambrose and Reigns and Sting. So that rumor was out there on the internet. I don't know if there's any validity to it or not. But obviously that didn't happen. So, of course, like one of my final questions I'm asking Ambrose, after he's done 2 hours of interviews, by the way, and he's not angry or anything, but he's done. I'm like, I'm doing the last interview with him. And I mentioned Sting. And I said, hey, what did you think about the rumors of Sting possibly being, you know, in a match with you guys? He was like, it was? Where did you hear that? Like, he was like, that was never going to happen. Yeah. And I said, well, there was rumors, you know. He goes, where did you hear that? And I go, I was on the internet. And he goes, he poked me in the shoulder. And he was just like, and multiple times. And he goes, you go on the internet too much.
Yep.
And that was the wrap-up to the interview, which, by the way, is still available on the YouTube channel of Dean Ambrose poking a hole through my shoulder. But, I mean, that's just who Dean is. I mean, you never know what kind of answer, what kind of response you're going to get from him. I don't think he loves doing interviews, but at the same time, I don't think he hates doing them. And right. Austin had to stay on him, you know? And the two really interesting things that came out of it was, so Ambrose was asked about the match with Lesnar at WrestleMania. And he went on to say that match was nothing like he wanted. He had all these ideas for making this crazy, violent spectacle against Brock Lesnar. And he said Brock basically wanted nothing to do with that. And he was just not into it. He had no ideas and just didn't want to do something like that. He said Ambrose said, no, the match was what it was, but Brock just didn't want to cooperate and didn't want to go all hardcore and go super violent. Now, obviously, they used canes and they used some chair shots, but it was nowhere close to the kind of match that Ambrose wanted. And you can
Let's be clear. Ambrose, if you know Ambrose, his origins on the indie scene, he is used to some pretty extreme violence and some pretty gruesome match. He is not the kind of guy that should have ended up as a WWE champion based off where he came from in those really hardcore matches with what was the
CCW. He worked with Combat Zone. Yeah. So
those matches were brutal.
Well, remember when that same interview we talked about the jeans, we were talking about using barbed wire in WWE, and he goes, trust me, he goes, I pitched it. They won't let me do it.
Yep.
Because he wants barbed wire.
Crazy. Yeah. So he is crazy.
He loves doing that stuff. And, you know, there's limits, you know. So he just said, you know, he was very disappointed in Brock that day. And Brock just didn't want to have anything to do with it. And it was just like he had to do what he had to do, you know. And I think he knew that hurt him, you know, considering that the ideas that he had for that match and I think the expectations that people had for that match. And it turned out disappointing. The other thing was at the end of the interview, Austin said, now that you're the WWE champion and you have a lot more leeway when it comes to your promos and stuff, he goes, I am challenging you to step up. I am challenging you to, you know, go outside the lines and do more, you know. And Ambrose is kind of taken back because I think while Ambrose obviously has more leeway into what he can say, it's not like he can just do whatever the hell he wants when it comes to angles or different things because there is a creative team and he answers to Vince McMahon. And I think this is one of these cases where Austin's used to playing by a different set of rules from when he was there. There was a lot more leeway, especially for top guys when Austin was there. They were in the middle of a war against another company. And plus you had the Attitude Era and everybody was out there and you wanted that shock value. And that's just not happening anymore. Yeah. And I think that's where Austin was going with this. Like, hey, I want to see somebody step up. And I want some, you know, Austin was even referring to, you know, some of Ambrose's work on the indies when it came to some of his promos and, you know, how he would go out there on a limb and he would do some edgy stuff. And Austin was challenging him to do this here. And Ambrose is like, hey, man, I'm still just going to work hard. But you could tell that he was really kind of taken back by this. And Ambrose is like, hey, it took a lot of work to get to this point, and I know the work is just now beginning, and I'm ready to do the work. So,
yeah. And you know, that's got to be a sore spot, because Ambrose really wants to say, I would love to do that. I would love to be as crazy as I've been before, but I've had, I mean, for a guy like Ambrose, he's had to really mind his P's and Q's to shed some of that extreme persona and become, he's not a company man, but to become more of a company, but take that back. He probably is a company man now. He's been in a WWE movie.
He absolutely is. He even went out of his way to say, hey, you know what? I thought it was so stupid and cheesy that the WWE always had this line of, we put smiles on faces. And he thought it was the dumbest thing ever. And then now that he is the champion, and now that he has traveled the world with WWE, he gets it. And he says, I see that I am a role model for people. I see that I put smiles on people's faces, that people appreciate it. You know, when I come to their town and I have a match, or, you know, they get to meet me, you know, or get an autograph. And I understand my role, and I understand the importance of this company and the role that I play in it. So he says, that line makes sense. And he goes, and that is my goal now, is I want to put smiles on faces.
Yep. He's a company man. I mean,
and
he
should be.
He
and I don't blame him. I don't put him down for that. You know, hey, people get in there and they that's what they want to do. And they enjoy it as well. It's not just a, you know, he wants to wrestle, obviously, and that's still the most important thing to him, is to have really good wrestling matches and have really good storylines and feuds and things like that. But at the same time, he understands he's in the entertainment business. You know, he understands the company he's in, the role that he's going to play, and I'm not going to put him down because he's going with the company mantra, because I think you can do both at the same time. Yep. I think you can enjoy your work and put smiles on people's faces. And it's not going to be this edgy, racy thing from years gone by. That's not where WWE is. But it doesn't mean that it still can't be good.
Yep. I agree.
Let's get to some of the news. So a couple of different things here. A couple of people are officially gone from the company. Ryback is gone. It was funny because, like, last Friday, Ryback did a video on Instagram where he was talking about the big guy is going to be gone come whatever day. He said the big guy would like to wish the WWE the best in their future endeavors. Beginning on Monday, August 8th, feedmemore.com is starting up. He's launching a clothing line, supplements, inspirational book is coming out, all these different things. And then on Monday, WWE says, Ryback is officially no longer with the company. We wish him the best in his future endeavors. So he is gone, and is basically his contract expired. And we all know there was a dispute about that. He's since gone on to do a Periscope, and he was answering some different questions, and he was talking about it wasn't just all about money. Don't believe that. There's a lot of other things that were going on. And you know what? We just decided to go our separate ways. The other one that's a little bit more of a surprise is Joey Styles is gone with the company. He worked for WWE.com.
Time out.
Yep.
Ryback, this is our first bit of breaking news. Oh. TNA is advertising someone big coming to their show tomorrow night.
Do you want me to spoil it as to who it is?
I would love for you to.
Okay, everybody, if you don't want to hear this, turn away for about 20, 30 seconds, okay? The surprise that will be on Impact tomorrow night will not be Ryback. It will be Damian Sandow. It will be Aaron Stevens, which is his real name, and he will be making his debut on the semi-live edition of Impact Wrestling.
I just think it's funny that they really are putting out stuff on the internet right now that to try to convince people that Ryback, because they say it's a big deal and all this kind of verbiage that make it seem like Ryback will be coming to TNA tomorrow night.
Well, I guess there's going to be a viral campaign that's going to be going on over the next day to build to this. But it is going to be the guy that I just said, because in case I don't want anybody to spoil it.
Spoiler. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, So that's where we're at when it comes to that. But yeah, Joey Styles is gone for the company. He worked, you know, on the digital side. He worked for .com. I'm surprised, but at the same time, I guess I'm not. I had always heard rumors that, like, Joey, a lot of people liked him. Maybe rubbed some people the wrong way. But the timing cannot be coincidental that he did with. So he got released like a week ago, actually, and the word got out this week. But I guess within like the last week and a half, he did a Facebook Live chat, and he was answering some questions, and they were talking about Roman Reigns' push, and basically he said, hey, you know what? Roman Reigns gets that push because the boss loves him and because women love him and everything's like that. He was talking about how he hates the three-man announcing teams, how he didn't like the name of the Universal Championship, different things like that. That video got pulled. And it was funny because, like, yeah, he was outspoken, but it was nothing really too outlandish, I didn't think. And maybe that was just the straw that broke the camel's back. But Joey Styles is gone from WWE. Mm.
It's a shocker. He was a really talented guy who did a lot of things. That's what I mean by talent. Obviously, he was talented with what he did from his ECW days up through WWE. But he was involved in so much digital media. It's really, it's a bigger hole, I think, than what you initially think it is.
Yeah. So what was the other breaking news that you had?
All right, breaking news.
Give me some scoops.
Okay, two scoops. All right. Number one. I don't know if you're into the WWE trading card scene, the digital trading card scene. But a couple of weeks ago, there was a limited Eva Marie card, a digital card, right? It's just a picture.
Did she have a wardrobe malfunction on it?
No, she did not. But somebody sold it on eBay for $90.
Holy moly.
Because the way the card game works is you collect these cards through packs that you open up or whatever. And it was a pack. She was a rare Eva Marie NXT card. And I guess the situation was right after she got brought up to SmackDown, they stopped, quote unquote, digitally making the NXT Eva Marie card. And so there was like three or four copies out there, and they all became worth money to people who collect pictures of cards in this trading card app. So, yeah.
Gotcha.
There you go. Second big news, talked about Big Show and how he's leaning up. You know why he's leaning up? Because he's going to be fighting Shaq at WrestleMania next year.
Yeah, that's been going on for a while. I mean, we thought that was going to happen. And it was funny because I've had people here in Orlando going, so is this really going to happen? I'm like, yeah, it's going to happen. I mean, Big Show, I mean, this had been rumored for a little while, and then Shaq had done an interview and Big Show's done an interview and they're talking about the match. I'm like, this match is going to happen, people. Uh-huh. I'm like, they already have one match booked for WrestleMania and it's Shaq versus Big Show.
But nobody knows about it. I guess they confirmed it last week with somebody. Yeah, it's just, it's weird. It's crazy.
Hey, man, booking ahead. Nobody can blame, everybody says they don't book far enough ahead. So they got one match done. You know, they got nine more to go for WrestleMania.
They're on their way.
They're on their way. I know we're all excited about that. I mean, I don't know who you're going to root for. I know you're probably going to be torn, but
I'm rooting for Shaq. Why not? He had his own game, Shaq Fu, his own movie. He was whatever.
Kazam.
Kazam. Yeah, he was Kazam. Played basketball.
I'm sorry that. He played basketball. I know him for that. Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest, Big Show, you know, he was in the NWO at one point, so who knows? This could go either way.
Shaq might have been the NWO too, I don't know. did he wear an NWO shirt at some point?
Everybody did. Jay Leno was in the NWO at one point, right?
Hey man, Eric Bischoff took over the Tonight Show one time, okay?
Oh,
Eric Bischoff and Hulk Hogan took over the Tonight Show one time.
We talk about how crazy wrestling is these days with all the indies and everything, but you think back to all of that entire scenario. Like, could you imagine somebody like Jimmy Fallon showing up at a wrestling pay-per-view? Like, what the hell? What was going on back in the 90s? It was weird. It was weird.
It was ratings, man.
Weird.
It was big, big, big ratings then, and people are going crazy. Hey, Jay Leno wrestled in a match against Hulk Hogan and put Hulk Hogan in the worst looking hammerlock ever, and Hogan sold it.
Oh, that's crazy.
My God.
I remember that really terrible looking, and he like really pulled on it, and
yeah.
It was like, oh.
It was like, ah! You know, it was like, oh my God, it's Jay Leno. Do you remember the street fight that went everywhere between Dennis Rodman and Randy Savage?
Yes.
Jeez almighty.
God. Yeah.
The funny thing was, Kevin Green, who just went to the NFL Hall of Fame, was actually a pretty damn good wrestler for as limited as he was, and would have had a really good future And if he had stayed with it, or if he had started it earlier, he would have been really, really good. But he was there from the NFL. And then Carl Malone actually wasn't too bad.
Yeah. Yeah, he was all right. The mailman.
And we talk about mainstream exposure in this. Remember when Rodman did a pay-per-view? And I don't know if it was the Macho Man match. I think it was another one. Because remember, he appeared on Nitro. He missed a practice with the Bulls to do that. And it was during the NBA Finals.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Against the Utah Jazz with Karl Malone.
Yep.
And that was like a monster story. Like, Dennis Rodman missed practice today, the day before game whatever, the NBA Finals, and he's going to be at WCW Nitro tonight.
Oh, man.
It's like, what the hell is going on? So
wrestling was crazy, dude. Wrestling was crazy.
It was absolutely crazy. So,
and you can relive it all on the Monday Night Wars exclusively on the WWE Network.
I know that on the network, they have just put up the rest of Raws from like 2005 to 2008 or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think they've got all the Raws now during the 2000s.
Wow, that's it then, huh? We're good.
Basically, yeah.
Life is complete. I know what I'm doing this weekend.
Yeah, you're going to finish moving.
Yep, finish unpacking and mow the grass.
That would help. The lawn needs it. I'll be back later in the week with another podcast, including an interview with Big Cass.
Nice.
You know, like Enzo and Big Cass. He's 7 foot tall and you can't teach that. So I'll be talking to Big Cass about SummerSlam and his match with Enzo taking on Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens. And so that'll be coming up in the next day or so. So be on the lookout for that. Once again, thanks everybody for listening to the podcast. You can get the podcast, subscribe on iTunes or on Stitcher, rate and review the podcast. You can also find it on SoundCloud, Google Play, the TuneIn app, and plenty of other apps that are out there as well. And make sure you check us out online. It's at BetweenTheRopes.com. On Twitter, it's at BetweenTheRopes. And if you want to follow us personally, it's at The Real Wiseman for Mikey. And for me, it's at Brian Fritz. So thanks again, everybody. I'll talk to you later in the week. And me and Mike will be back next week here at our normal time. So hope everybody has a good week. We'll talk to you later.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Now, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you. Have a nice day.